This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
I'm really happy to be here. I've obviously, like most of us, have been unable to travel. I haven't been speaking very much in the last 2 years. I've missed it tremendously. I've missed being with all of you, and so I'm really excited to be here. I have a bunch of things I want to talk through, but very honestly, as I told the organizers, I'd like to do as much Q&A as possible today, because I think I have a funny feeling that not much I'm gonna say here is gonna surprise a lot of you, because one thing I am is extremely consistent of what I believe. I think what makes the way I communicate interesting to me when I analyze myself is I have certain things that haven't changed since I was 10 years old that I'm still saying. Back then I would just say it to my mom or my friends. And then I have the luxury of spending so much of my time listening that even though my 15, 20, 50 macro philosophies, whether it's patience or curiosity or things of that nature, are very consistent. And if you watch me for even a year, you can get bored of it because you know what's coming out of my mouth. There's the flip side and the complete extreme, which is my now 20-year ability to understand what's happening at this moment and how to deploy that consistent point of view against a TikTok arbitrage or NFTs or whatever it might be. And I think that's probably a really fun place to start this talk, which is when I think about why would you be here? Fair. Fair. I love you too. When I think about why you would love me, it would be from a place of all of us want to make our lives better, you know, and the people we love better, right? And I think one of the great mistakes so many people that follow me and think they've got my message down make is they make content for their self-interest, not for their audience. They don't understand that by making content for their audience, there's a very good chance over a decade period of time, their self-interest will come through. The amount of people that I see give me love, DM me, say these nice things to me, they're about me, this and that, and when I spend 5 minutes analyzing their social media execution, it's very disheartening for me because they're picking and choosing what they hear from me. To do what I do and what I see others do that is successful, whether it's a person, a brand, a business, you have to do all parts of it. People love to see the part of tenacity, but they struggle a little bit more with patience. People love to think that they're giving, and they're giving, but they struggle to see that they're giving with manipulation and with intent of something for themselves, which is the furthest thing from giving in the world. So I think what's really interesting as I go into this next chapter of my career is I've got to push myself harder to get into the depths of the nuances and the little tiny context points that make what I do work with the hope that you can have it too. One of the crazy things that has become obvious to me in the last decade is the reason I give away everything I've got is because I don't think if you then go take it and do well, that comes out of my pocket. I'm fascinated by how many people hold things back because they don't think or realize that the world is fundamentally abundant. Everyone is so scared that if they give away their best advice or their best content, that somebody's gonna take that and run with it. I had dinner with my dad 2 days ago, which was really nice. And he reminded me of a story when I was a kid. I went to a industry liquor store in New Jersey, industry event. And I walked around and was telling other liquor store owners about how well winelibrary.com was doing and why email was the future. And when we got back in, my dad talked about like us not, like that was bad. Like why would you tell them? They're gonna do it. They're gonna take our customers. And I looked at my dad and I said, they can't steal my brain. And it reminded me of who I was when I was 17, 19, 21, which is just a younger, less experienced version of who I am today. But what I promise you is, as we all sit here today without knowing exactly what Santino or Ben or whoever has in mind of what they want to do, whether you're in B2B or B2C, whether you're in real estate or crypto, content, have your own agency, sell sneakers, it's very easy for me to talk to this room because there are certain things that no matter what you are, even if you're not an entrepreneur, if you're a stay-at-home parent, if you are a teacher, if you are running for political office, there are things that are incredibly consistent about the human race. I was an atrocious student, but the one class I was consistently strong at was history. And I never really understood why until I got into this last decade of my life when I started understanding myself better on how I roll. And it's because history just tells me the future. We're consistent. We're animals. We are who we are. And we only navigate through one framework, our actual perspective on life. Every single person here is navigating every single day predicated on how they see it. How they see it is predicated on how they grew up, their environment, their DNA, their parenting. But most interesting to me, what they are currently listening to or whom. The thing that's really interesting to me is if you turn your head to the left, you see it different than if you turn your head to the right. And what I've been trying to spend a lot of time on over the last 15 years of my life, first subconsciously, now consciously, is I just want people to be happier because it makes me personally feel good to make people happy. To be incredibly transparent, I also feel a level of guilt because as I've come to know the world better, I've come to realize how incredibly lucky I am. And look, for entrepreneurs like me who've worked their face off their whole life, luck is a tricky word. Because as you know, and I'm sure people in your life have done this, people love to throw out luck as a thing to make themselves feel better about somebody who's doing well. They use it when they have envy or jealousy, and that's fine. But I'm incredibly lucky. I grew up in a perfect storm of situations that gave me what I have. I have the luxury of being born in adversity. Just like this lovely lady flew from Moscow, like where we're from, where I was born, what people don't, you know, what most people in the world don't realize is the Soviet Union in its 70-year run, you weren't allowed to leave the country. Like, leave it. It was, for all intents and purposes, jail. And so the fact that I was born in that place at the time where some people were able to leave, that's luck. The fact that I get to go to America, a foundational country in our society that cherishes and applauds entrepreneurship when I was born a purebred entrepreneurship, luck. The fact that I was an immigrant and, you know, for all the immigrants in here, you know, immigrant life in that first half decade or decade is basically about food and shelter. You're not worried about fucking fresh kicks. You're worried about fucking eating. And so when you have that, and then you have a little bit of a frugal mom like I did, my parents didn't buy me shit, which trained me as an animal that I had to go get mine. That was a luxury. It's hard to be hungry when you're always fed. And so that was luck. But the biggest luck I had by a country mile is that I had a mother who built such a framework of perspective for me and balanced confidence and self-awareness, but also ramifications, eliminating delusion. She created such a framework that I had no chance but not to win. I think the world is about communication, period. I think there's nothing else. I think the world is based on communication. It's how everybody does everything. Communication is why this world is religion-based. The printing press has invented a new form of communication, books. The disproportionate leader of printing books in the first two decades of the printing press were religious institutions. And here we are hundreds of years later, and our society is framed on it. In a much more small way, Google AdWords come out in 2000. The number one advertiser on that platform for the first 5 years is Amazon, and it is the foundation of why they're one of the biggest companies in the world, besides the talent of the executives. For me, life is crazy simple, and I'm desperately trying to get this room to make it crazy simple. Here's what it is. It is based on the opportunity to communicate so that you can achieve what will make you happy, and it's predicated on what you are trying to accomplish based on who you actually are. After that, everything becomes incredibly secondary. After that level of self-awareness and understanding of how the world operates, you can decide what you want to do. You can then focus on your passion, trying to maximize your dollars, or whatever else tickles your fancy. The problem is the simplicity of the framework is something people struggle with tremendously. As many of you probably know, the other thing that drives me today is I think that negativity is dramatically louder than positivity. I believe if you analyze the world, social media, mainstream media, your household, negativity is loud. Positivity tends to be quiet because it's got internal strength to deal with the negativity, and it doesn't bother itself with the negativity. Because of that, we have a world that is louder about bad and quieter about good. When this became obvious to me 7, 9, 5 years ago, I felt an incredible energy of conviction and really, just honestly, accountability. I felt like I had to get loud about the truth of the world. And here's the truth. The world is better today than it's ever been in the history of mankind. Yet, so few people believe it. I love when all my friends are like, Gary, you fucking social media ruined the world. Look what's going on. I'm like, wait, you loved mainstream media? You mean 1920 to 1990 when the world was at the height of dictatorship and fascism, war? What the fuck are you talking about? We are incredibly, incredibly capable of misunderstanding the situation. We can do it in the macro, and then to bring it way down, for me to get off my philosophy train and get into the trenches with you, it's the biggest reason most of your businesses don't grow the way you want to. You are misreading the situation. The reason I talk about the things I talk about is, for example, as all of you are trying to build, how many people here by show of hands have 5 or more employees in a company they run? Raise your hands. Stand up, actually, stand up. Stand up if that's you. More than five, your business. All right? Please stand, don't be bashful. You trying to, 5? Yeah, you're good. First, let's clap it up for these winners. Now, this is very important. For the people that are standing, the number one most obvious thing that I see every day of my life over the last 20 years is they think somebody in their company is at fault for something without realizing it's their fault. This is the breakthrough. You like that one? You're excited about that? Anybody who's standing right now, just this is the easiest, my favorite framework. This is probably the most simplistic sentence that I genuinely, this is not some foofy, let's do a show shit. This is real as fuck to me. Everybody who's standing right now, the quickest way for your business to get much, much bigger is for you to realize right now, every single thing that's wrong in your company is not Johnny or Sally's fault. It is 100% your fault because you fucking hired Johnny and Sally. You can sit. This is a very big deal. This is like funny to me. I am shocked that we now live in 2021 in a world where bosses don't want accountability. Where are we? accountability, the reason the world is so tense and the reason the world is so upset is because people don't like accountability. We love to point fingers, we hate to point thumbs. You could still be right, but the act of pointing your thumb makes it better. Let me say that slowly. I take accountability for everything that's wrong in my businesses easily. It has become second nature. Logically, I often think I'm right and Johnny and Sally are wrong, logically. But in real truth, I am the one who hired their boss's boss. How many people here own a VFriend? Raise your hand. Thank you. If any of those people, how many of you, if you're in here, does anybody here own a gift goat? My man, stand up for this goat. So you, out of all these people, may know what happened this week. Correct, so thank you. I just want to confirm that there is a human that knows what I'm about to tell you is true, it's him, all right? This week, NFTs are decentralized, anonymous, Web3, but the world is still predominantly Web2. Gift Goat was a token I sold in NFT land where you own the token, but you also get 18 physical gifts from me over the course of 3 years. As you can imagine, I'm gonna need to have an address to send it to you. Thus, I need information. We're going through that whole process with that small group of 555 token holders. I still held a bunch, so call it a community of 300 to 400. Even though we have a clear system, even though four people around it are super strong, been with me for a long time, as my friend here knows, this week we sent an email to all the Gift Goat holders to confirm a continuation of something we need to finish this process off. The team completely didn't follow protocol and decided to send a regular email instead of through MailChimp and a server and send it with everybody's email in the CC. Yeah. Now, the reality is, in a non-custodial environment of NFT land, there's a lot of mistakes you have to do to get something stolen from you. And just having one's email is not gonna be the death blow, but it's a piece that could get to a death blow if the person on the other side and others make two or three other critical mistakes. The insanity of this mistake was high. Like, comments in the Discord for Gift Goats only of like, how do we have confidence? Everything they're saying, they're right. It was such an amateur mistake. We haven't made that mistake on regular Gary Vee fucking Monday morning emails saying what's up to you. This, they're hypersensitive to information. So here's what happens. I come out of a meeting in LA, I get the tech, in 2 seconds, I'm like, woof, like right, blood to the head, like, wind out of chest, because I know it's going to, one, cause some anxiety for my community, them. Two, back to me, first them, now me. First, oh shit, there's gonna be a couple people that own this thing that are gonna be anxious, and I feel bad. Next, me, which is really not me. Next, oh shit, I have 4 employees right now that are scared shitless, and they're anxious. Next, me. Oh fuck, I don't have 2 hours, but the next 2 hours are fucking completely destroyed because I have to go into full damage control and community building to make sure my community knows that I don't think this is a good thing and I've got to fix it. And that's what I did. Within 39 seconds of knowing the situation, I recorded an entire video taking on accountability and posting the community, and then spent the next hour and a half with the community in Discord. Why do I tell you that story? I tell you that story because I actually believe in accountability. My biggest concern is that I know there's a lot of people here who consume my content, leave comments, DM me, engage. They talk my talk, but they don't live my talk. I get more emails from people that are the employees of people who love me and talk about me all day to tell me that Rick loves you. I have no idea what you're talking about, but Rick's completely full of shit. He talks like you talk. He repeats your shit, but he's a fucking asshole. That Rick story is super common. I know there's a ton of Ricks in this room right now. I know it more than the sun will come up tomorrow. You talk that Gary V shit, you don't live that Gary V shit. And where you don't live it is not on the hustle and grind. You don't live it on the kindness and humanity. You don't live it on the empathy and about that. 100%. Fucking 100%. And I don't say that on stage to come up here and like, I'm good and scolding you. I'm coming on stage saying, cut that shit out. I promise you, if you listen to this, it's real. It's real. The reason I pound patience down everyone's throat and everyone hates the flavor of it is because once you have a framework of patience, it eliminates so much bad behavior. Patience is important because most people can't see, like the way I set up this talk, can't see that most of the shit they do is for affirmation from other people. People can't see that most of the shit they do is to get credit from other people. Normally toxic relationships, whether parents, siblings, plus ones, or my favorite thing to hate, because I hate the word hate, but I hate this. So many of you live your life based on the comments from strangers on social media. People here don't post certain shit because they don't think it's gonna get enough likes. People post certain shit that they're not even about anymore because they think it's gonna get a bunch of likes. People are scared to make video content when they know video content works because they're scared the way they look and they don't want people to say they don't look good. The world runs on a currency of people trying to get affirmation from others. People buy shit they can't afford, do shit they don't wanna do, all to impress people they don't even like. The opportunity for you to accomplish whatever the fuck you're up to right now has never been greater than it is right now. Thank you. We're at full scale of Web 2. From TikTok to Facebook, Meta. From TikTok to Meta. Fuck, that's gonna be hard. From TikTok to Meta to YouTube to podcast, you are now pretty much capable of reaching almost any person on earth if you're good enough. My favorite other non-accountable thing. My Instagram's down because Meta wants me to just run ads and they're fucking with the algorithm, these fucking fuckers. My favorite part of that is not true, Rick. Here's what's actually happening. From Facebook to TikTok to Twitter to YouTube, they're just a blank supply and demand machine. They all start out the same way. How many people here, by show of hands, have been following me long enough that when I get crazy and got crazy on TikTok 3 years ago, you listened and it worked out for you? Raise your hands. Let's clap it up for them, that's awesome. So for the people that just raised their hands, was that the first platform that you built a big community? Raise your hand. Perfect. So for those hands, what they realized when they went through it was, oh, what Gary's been saying consistently is right. You can start at zero when a platform has a ton of people consuming, but not a ton of people making content, and the ads haven't started yet. It's just supply and demand. There's people consuming, there's people making. The third variable that always happens is eventually that platform adds an advertising product, and over time, more money goes into it, but there's still just one feed. It's just supply and demand. It's real estate. It's the algorithm. The algorithm isn't trying to trick you into spending ads. you're just not better than everybody else. You're not funnier. You're not better looking. You're not smarter. The algorithm is truth. Your subjective feelings are false. This is a good thing. This isn't bad. This is awesome. When you realize that's true, you realize, oh crap, there are people still exploding out of nowhere on YouTube, even though it's at scale. When you realize that, you're like, oh crap, there are people crushing on Instagram right now, even though the majority of us, me included, organic reach is down. They're innovating, they're adjusting. They go from a picture looking good with lighting to making a reels, because that's how the algorithm's working. The amount of humility that I find in the business world is staggeringly low. The amount of humility that I see in the business world is staggeringly low. Why do I keep finding things like NFTs and TikTok and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and email and .com? Why is my career my career? It's based on two things, curiosity and humility. Do you think I had a lot of time in December and January this last year to spend on reading about something called NFTs? You think I had those 50, 60, 70 hours a week extra to keep digging in January? I did not. What I had was curiosity and humility. Curiosity, because my spidey senses said there's something fucking happening, and by listening and reading all your DMs and comments, all that time I put in, that's how I stumble on shit. But way more importantly than that, humility. I have friends, when I pinged them in January and said, you need to Google this shit, you need to watch some of these YouTube videos, you need to read about this NFT, they replied with, my time's too valuable. Yeah, you know where this next line's going. I am fascinated, fascinated by the lack of humility to create innovation in the entrepreneur and business world. People value their time, and my favorite part is, this has now become very clear to me. The people that tend to value their time the most in my world, when I really analyze it, are the people whose time is the least valuable. They're built on some straight facade, ego. They think they're somebody. They're also, and this is a big one, most people continue to be transactional. What's in it for me for the 30 hours I put in this month? Nothing when you innovate. Nothing. If you're gonna innovate, you gotta go build some shit, stay alive until everybody comes. These are the things that are running through my mind. These are the frameworks that I think about so much. This is where I'm at this point of my career. I don't understand how people don't realize that kindness is the single strongest foundation to building a huge business. And let's have this talk. I really wanna have this talk. I'm not on some ideology shit up here. I'm not on some Zen foo-foo Buddha shit up here. I'm on some I'm a better businessman than all of you combined shit. Okay, that's where I'm at. So let there be no confusion when I talk over the next 5 minutes. I'm not on some like, let's zen it out, let's all be nice and kumbaya. I'm on some, I'll fucking destroy every one of you fuckers hard shit, okay? I have to say this because you have to hear me. I believe that kindness is an alpha killer business trait, not some nice additive to the way the world is today. Here's why. It's sustainable. When you're building something, how many people here are building something for themselves? Raise your hands. Higher. Higher. Thank you. There's a lot of people doing that in this room. You have to understand why kindness matters. Kindness matters because you yourself will feel better. And you're the fucking engine. You have to understand why kindness matters. If you're kind to your employees, they stay longer. Continuity matters when you're building something meaningful. You have to understand why kindness matters. If you don't fuck over your vendors by not paying them or doing the right, if you do the right thing, they keep doing business with you. You gotta understand why kindness matters. Why the fuck did I buy this sneaker? Why? It does look good, but why? This. This fucking little swoosh is worth $1 trillion. This fucking little swoosh is worth $1 trillion fucking dollars. That's called brand. When you're kind and you do it for 15 years, you build a reputation. That reputation, my friends, is called brand. We, all of us, have been taught way too long for the last 100 years about business that it's a dirty game, that it's a sharp elbows game, that if you're nice, you'll get walked all over game. It's not true. And I think it's fucking time we start talking about it. Yes. Are you seriously? It's not true. It's fucking not true. It's not true. And it's fucking time that we talk about it. The people that are the kindest, most honorable, when you're so good that you have no negative intent for anybody else and you don't do wrong things, you move fast. Do you know how many of you waste unlimited amounts of energy and time being mad about some dumb shit? Do you know why I out-navigate so many of my competitors? I don't waste a minute on fucking drama. People love some fucking drama. You love a good confrontation. Love it. My dad once got so, I once saw my dad, we had a beer truck delivering beer. The beer truck was leaving. It's a big truck, beer truck. The guy didn't have a lot of room in the parking lot. He ran over a flower. I saw my dad from the corner. This man was so happy that he was about to get into a fight with the beer driver. You would have thought he won the fucking lottery. He ran so fast. He is looking for it. And I said, Dad, you look for confrontation. You gotta get better inside so you have peace, so you don't fight. My friends, if you're looking for fights, you're hurt. There is no reason to be in major confrontations. The people that win in business, the big game. Not some transactional small shit you think you're somebody. The big fucking game are the people that are capable about being the bigger person in every situation. Bro, where are you going? You better be taking a shit. Go. Because the good stuff's coming. My friends, I sit here while we have that little laugh bathroom break, and what's going through my mind is, fuck man, I know most of these people don't fully understand what I'm saying right now. That's what's going through. I'm like, I don't know, I'm gonna fight for this forever. We have to get this framework down because it's super real and it super works. There are tried and true principles that are forever, and then what that allows you to do is have time to look for the new shit. You understand? If you're cruising over here on the empathy, compassion, kindness, patience, accountability side, if you're cruising, because I promise you, whatever's broken over here, it's eating up all the time. If you're insecure, you're overthinking everything. If you're confrontational, you're looking for fucking confrontation. If you're a gossip, you're looking to call your business friend and just shit on some other people, tearing down other people's buildings to make yourself feel better when it's doing nothing for nobody. When you got this shit going, you have time. People was like, Gary, how do you have fucking time? I'm not wasting time on dumb shit. That's how. You know how much energy this shit takes? My friends, let's make a pledge with me right now. Don't talk shit about your competitor. Don't talk shit about your competitor. Let me tell you why. One, it's a waste of your 10 minutes. Two, what's really happening is you're giving her or him more power. You talking shit about your competitor is making your competitor stronger. I don't even know my competitors' names. I don't even know they exist. Give a fuck. Spend 0 seconds on it. Cheering for them, let them do their thing, has nothing to do with me. The world is abundant. Nobody on earth is taking your money or your happiness. Your perception that they are is taking your money and your fucking happiness. This is where we're at. We're at this crossroads where I genuinely believe that we can reframe the business world. I believe that business could be a remarkable engine of good. I really do. It's got the pieces in place. Inherently, it's built on merit. Inherently, it's built on merit. It's got so many of the ingredients. What it doesn't have is it doesn't have the full conversation being talked about. It's too me, me, me. It's too winner takes all. It's too all that. And listen, I love to compete. I love to win. I love to take, like, I love all that shit. But it's more complex than that. And I want to get people into that framework. I'll go over here and then we'll go into Q&A. Over here is back to what I said earlier when I got that great woo from that dude right there. The opportunity is enormous. We have a full pledged, 25 years in, full scale Web 2.0 world. Social, internet, phone, it's at scale. The highways have been built. The planes have been built. It's at scale. We're all here. In our primes, it's at scale. And over here, we have the emerging Web3 decentralized world. Very similar to what I grew up in 1995 with the internet. For the young, how many people here over the ages of 45? Raise your hand. Raise your hands. You're being a little bashful. Raise your hands. Higher. All right, let's clap it up for us old fuckers. Not a lot, which is amazing. So, for the 45-year-olds plus in here, we truly remember, I'm looking at some of you gray hairs now, right? We remember actually living our entire childhood without the internet. The whole thing. We fully lived life and understood what the world was without it. So when it came, this is now education for the youngsters in here, especially the real youngsters, like, when it came, it was hard for people to understand. What you're seeing right now with NFTs is very similar. People can't wrap their head around it. The same jokes I hear about NFTs are the same jokes I heard about the internet in 1995. The same person that says, this is so stupid, I'll just control copy it and I own the JPEG. No, you don't. The same thing I heard, which is, Gary, who's gonna buy stuff on the World Wide Web? My answer was, everyone. In 1995, almost anybody I knew over the ages of 35 thought the answer was no one. The difference with Web3, decentralized, Ethereum, Bitcoin, this whole world, is we have the internet. We didn't have anything else besides the mainstream media and the way the world was when the internet came along, so they controlled the narrative. With the internet around, the narrative is being controlled by a lot of people, not by 7 or 15. That's changing. That's a good thing and that's a bad thing. Let me say it very clear to you all right now. I believe that NFTs are gonna be one of the most important things for all of us for the rest of our lives. I also believe right now that 98% of the NFTs that people are buying are gonna go to zero and be huge money losses. I also believe the 2% that are out there are gonna be the biggest financial wins in those people's lives. That's the game. What does that mean? Like, if I'm sitting there and I haven't discovered this yet, but I believe that Gary might be, like, what does that mean? It means you need to do 50 hours of homework because I promise you're not gonna guess your way to the 2%, right? This is a time for, nobody should be, nobody should be in this fucking room right now that has not spent 50 hours reading or listening or watching videos about NFTs. You shouldn't. You're here for me. You shouldn't. If you're here for me, then you're of a certain perspective, a certain mindset, a certain energy, a certain curiosity, a certain ambition. Please, please, please don't make the same mistake you did by not going hard at TikTok 3 years ago or Snapchat or all the other shit I've been doing for 15 years, you all know which one you didn't do that now turned out to be what it is. Please spend 50 hours on this. Do you know how many of you have an opinion on NFTs without ever studying an hour on NFTs? You read one headline or you listened to one friend that kind of knows something about something and you formed your complete opinion about it. We form our opinions on headlines, not on research. All the opportunity is to do the reverse. Please spend 50 hours on it, because you have to understand, it's contractual infrastructure. It's not about art and collectibles. This is how you're gonna contract every single thing you do, from buying a home, renting a car, all of it will be built on this technology. Please pay attention. Got it? Good. I am super close. I think I'm ready to, I just wanna do Q&A, fuck it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. Guys.
Thank you.
We had a competition for the Q&A and the answers were so good, I didn't want to select 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So how it's going to work, put your hands up and the mic runners will come and we're going to just be authentic here. Ask the question that really you want to ask. Please don't just put your hand up for branding purposes. Ask the question now, guys. Thank you.
I'm ready. Who's got the mics? You got one? Are you ready? Okay, where are we going first? Yep, go ahead, my
brilliant.
Man.
First of all, Gary, can I just say, you have impacted me so much the past 4 years, and I've never met you, but I'm literally saying, you have been, out of everyone that I've never met, you have impacted me most, and I'm so grateful, so much, so grateful for
Thank
you.
Thank you, bro. Thank you so much. What's your name?
Thomas Lloyd-Williams.
Thomas.
So yeah, Gary, essentially, I went through a bit of, I've been through a journey. I've realized that health and wellness and changing the way health and wellness education is educated in this country, in schools, colleges, is my vision, is my purpose. That is my purpose.
Okay.
I don't understand that now. That's been developed over business competitions. I've recently taken the dive because I I'm getting a bit flustered. You're Gary V on the stage. This is a bit crazy.
Don't worry, Thomas.
Anyway.
Thomas, can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
First and foremost, in the same way that you're like, Gary, out of all the people in my life, you've impacted me the most. If you want to change the narrative of health and wellness, you're not going to do it through the school system.
Yeah.
So if you want to change the way the school system's doing it, you can't conform into that system. You have to go around it and destroy that system.
Yes.
Biggest mistake I see from a lot of people is they want to change something and they think the way to change it is to go into the thing and change it, because they're naive to how infrastructurally broken those things are.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm on stage.
Well, thank you. Is
You're
all
welcome.
I can say.
You're welcome.
I kind of want to hug this, but I don't want to be too selfish.
So that's it. Do you understand? If you're thinking about going into that system, don't. Create content and infrastructure outside of it. You have no chance of changing it from within.
Gary, if I start posting again, because basically I realize I need financial security as well for my family. I'm
yep.
in property, and this is going really well. But if I went, when I start doing, it's called Mantra Life UK, would you reshare it? And if I promise I'll go all in. I've been all in on it before.
I'll only reshare it if I think it's worth resharing.
I promise it'd be worth sharing.
Well, I'm sure you believe that, but I have to decide for myself, Thomas.
Absolutely, Gary Vaynerchuk. Right, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Who's next? Stand up.
Hey, Gary. So,
what's your name?
Oh, Katie.
Nice to meet
you. I have
you.
A V friend, by the way.
Very nice. Which
yes.
one?
Innovative Apala. I'm trying to get top of the rank, so you notice it. And, you know, just subconsciously, that
thank
one.
You.
So I went to see you years ago in Poland, and I asked you a question, and I kept on saying 3 years. And you told me, you went, listen, drop the 3 years, it could happen in 10 months. And I didn't listen to you, because I was just like, it's going to take 3 years, Gary. But I went on Musical.ly, so when TikTok took over, and I mean, I did amazing on there, you know, and I was the first TikToker Red Bull used. I went to TikTok HQ. I went to VidCon as a TikTok creator. I was in the red room. I had all these, you know, and I couldn't handle it because I had such imposter syndrome because I just wasn't ready for it. Because in my head, I said 3 years and it was a lot, you know, and I broke down, but I'm very resilient. There's no fucking way I wasn't showing up to all those things.
Yes.
But I want to know what you would say to help get over imposter syndrome, because I've learned if you fucking work hard, you fucking show up, you get it quicker. And I don't want that to happen to me, you know.
I appreciate it. I think imposter syndrome isn't predicated on the speed in which it happens. I think it comes from the place of the perspective that the human has, right? A lot of people feel that they're faking the funk for two separate reasons. One, they genuinely know that they're full of shit. They just know they're faking it. Mm-hmm. And it might be working outwardly, but they know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I'm about and what I want to put out into the world is to get people off that train. Mm. The amount of people that buy the clothes to make them look the part is devastating to me because it's makeup. Mm-hmm. The car is makeup. Mm-hmm. It's makeup. Some people genuinely like clothes and understand it. Some people genuinely like watches and understand it. Some people genuinely love cars and understand it. And that's a beautiful thing. I love that. There's just a lot of people that use those things for the makeup. So there's that group. And what I try to tell that group every day is like, stop impressing other people. It's never a winning formula. You will always lose in the end. It is not a sustainable framework. You will burn out. The other one is they were just built insecure. Mm-hmm. They just feel some insecurity. They don't feel they deserve it. They don't love themselves enough. They don't think they're good enough. And what I tell those people is that's all fake too, because everybody else sucks too. I mean that. A lot of times people win and they're confused. I remember the first big piece of media I ever got was New Jersey's number one newspaper in 1998 when newspapers still had a lot of clout. Huge profile on me. It was my big coming out party to the business world and the wine world. And the first question the person asked me, this is my first question in my first business interview of my life. And the person goes, how did you build your dad's store so big, so fast? And my answer was, lack of competition. That wasn't to razz and make everybody else feel bad in hindsight. It was a framework that everyone else sucks too. You're putting other people on a pedestal, which is why you got there. You decided me or somebody else is better. And by putting somebody else on a pedestal, you put yourself at a lower level, which created that feeling. Mm. So this is a game of self-esteem predicated on perspective, which is why I fucking spent 40 fucking minutes on it. That.
Yeah, because. Because for me, the reason why I got an audience, because I was very authentic and I had no filters. And if I cried, I cried. You know, when you show up every day and you produce mass content by yourself, there's some fucking ugly days, you know, and we're humans. But like you said, I was built on insecure because I was always told that I couldn't get it. So when all of a sudden everyone was just like, yeah, you got this, couldn't happen to a better person, my brain was just they'll find out.
The thing there that I really struggle with that I try to make sure everybody understands is you can't make it about a thing. The greatest misunderstanding about me professionally is that that people think I'm very focused on buying the New York Jets. Like, I need to buy the Jets. I need to try to buy the Jets. I don't, like, when Sally buys the Jets in 40 years, I'm gonna make a video and be like, great shit, Sally, now win me some games. It's not gonna be devastating. It's not gonna ruin my life. I'm in it for the process. When you make a system, when you say, I was never gonna get it, and then I got it, and that fucked me up, what fucked you up was deciding that there's some sort of got it. The thing that fucks up so many people is they have some make-pretend goal. Mm-hmm. $1 million, $10 million, 1 million followers, a this, a that. They make it up. And then you're really fucked, because if you really give that power, then you're always anxious until you get it. And then even worse, when you get it, you're like, now what? And you're more fucked up. Yes. So for me, the framework that I'm trying to get everybody about is like, do something you like and call it a day. I like business. It's fun for me.
Thank you for changing my life, Gary.
Thank you. Cheers. Oh, who's got the mic? Hi.
Hi. I'm just really shitting myself, so please bear with.
What's your name?
My name's Happy. Nice you mentioned, Gary, about abundance.
Yes.
And how we're all in this, you know, maybe peak capitalism, I don't know. So I know what you mean about abundance, and it's great as it is now. However, from my perspective, and as we all must understand, our ecological environment and what I could call our life support system is not feeling particularly abundant, and we're all impacting massively on it day by day.
Yes.
And we call this system, and it's globalization and it's capitalism.
Yes.
So either, I'm wondering your perspective on this, either there are technological solutions in place, and we've been waiting for these technological solutions for decades, and they're not bringing us solutions quick enough. So perhaps we're in end-stage capitalism, and perhaps no system can last forever.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how you see sustainability, because we're not living sustainably right now, how you see it all progressing and what comes next.
Yeah, so let's hold the mic. So let's talk it down.
Yeah,
a couple
sure.
things. Number one, when I talk about abundance, I'm talking about the mentality of abundance from a framework of happiness.
Okay.
So I actually think materialism, which is a byproduct of capitalism, is the biggest issue to seeing abundance, because when you put money and things on a pedestal, you don't understand your abundance. So that's number one. So for me, it's not capitalism. Mm. I also don't think the world is actually in capitalism.
Right.
I don't think there's an end or a beginning.
What do you think it is in then?
Well, first of all, the biggest impact on the environment is the infrastructure based around China, which is a communist country with a half-pregnant facade of capitalism.
USA uses five planets.
No, I understand, but you have to understand, like the entire supply chain, like forget about electric, like China is going to be the world power, right?
Okay, right.
You agree or disagree?
From my perspective, it's an individual responsibility, and it's very easy to say.
Well, so
it's China, it's USA, it's whatever.
I totally agree with you.
So your perspective is it's China.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, no, my perspective is not that it's China. It's that first of all, I 100% agree with you that it's individualism.
Yeah.
I think that you also put it into a framework of it's capitalism. I really do. That's how you structured the question. So my point there is, I don't think we're in such capitalism, because I think so much is centered around China if we're going there. I fully agree with you on individualism. Mm. That comes from communication and actions. So for example, as you're probably aware, the best trend in what you're passionate about is that consumers are speaking to it a lot more than they ever have, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and COVID has really brought that out of people.
The worst part for you about what you're passionate about is people are speaking to it, but not spending, and their hypocrisy around it, which is a huge problem, right?
Yeah, that's because everything, as you say, is great, so people don't want it. People think it can only get worse, because we haven't imagined for ourselves the future that we actually want.
So the problem is, though, when you go to we in a game of individualism, you get back to the framework that I said. I think from my perspective, the way it gets there is communication. But who?
Oh, yeah.
Right? But who?
Yeah.
Right? I have zero confidence in government being the who.
Yeah.
The US, EU, China, put them all together. I don't have confidence in that, because countries are run by humans that are trying to protect their status, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, who takes that lead?
Yeah, so I'm taking that lead.
Amazing.
I am turning it into a business, but I haven't made any money yet, whatever, because I'm a singer and, you know, music's free. I think music's been capitalized. So my idea—
Well, music is stunningly not free. This is back to perspective. There's never been more infrastructure for long tail music monetization than there is right now in the history of music.
Okay, I haven't made any money and I've been doing it for like 20 years. Maybe I'm shit, I don't know.
It's not that you're it's not that you're shit. Yeah. It's that you have to this is an important point.
Yeah.
You have to recognize that that's true though.
I recognize it's true, and that's why I've diversified, and I'm trying what I call activism. So it's to connect people to their inner activists. So people feel powerless, and they don't know what to do.
Yep.
But I do believe that everyone in this room has got something that's really bugging them, be it plastics, be it animals, and it's also humans. But I think we need to understand, we need to look outside of our... the word is anthropocentric, so we're in the Anthropocene. So you look outside of that, and whatever is really bugging anyone about it, you take action on that, and you just do it. The same as everything else, same as in your business. You don't think someone should do something about it. You just become that person, and that is really growing at the moment.
I love that. I agree.
Thank you.
I hope that people can deploy compassion and empathy to the things they most care about and do something about it. I live that life on the things that most trigger me. I think the thing that we have to do is think about how to lead by example versus telling people which issues. I'm with you.
Oh yeah.
Listen.
Yeah. Everyone's got their thing. They're just waiting for someone else. We all need kind of permission, and we've all got that permission to do something, because then it's like, oh my God, you're an activist, and activists are always like sitting in the road being really annoying, and you know, they never do it quite right, and they should be doing it nicely. There is no nice way to do it.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Gary.
Yep.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. All right?
I love it.
Excellent.
What's your name, my friend?
Joseph.
Joseph.
So I'm here because a friend invited me today, and I know very little about NFTs.
Okay.
But I understand you do.
Yep.
So on the tube on the way here today, I read The Economist magazine. And I don't know if you've seen it yet, but there's a big special on NFTs.
Okay.
And they created their own NFT, and they marketed it and auctioned it, and they sold it for $400,000.
Okay.
And they donated it to charity. And they listed a few things that are issues with NFTs. And one of them is the environment.
Yes.
They said the process that they went through
to
create and market and sell and auction this NFT
used
the same amount of carbon as a long-haul flight. So someone who's thinking of getting into it, is that something I should be worried about? And what's your view on that?
It's back a couple things. It's back to headline reading.
It's kind of related to that, yes.
Yeah, it's a tremendous question.
A little bit question. My question already.
It was a perfect combo, which her point is remarkably important. It's also the point I made about headline reading, and it comes together in here, right? So to the Economist point, I have to read the article to see the context, but Ethereum, for example, from proof of work to proof of stake, has changed its process to make the carbon footprint dramatically different than it was 3-4 years ago, and even 12 months ago when there was a lot of conversation. Back to this wonderful woman's point, there are people who are gonna care more about plastic. There are people who are going to care more about flights. People are going to care, you know, for example, I have a friend whose number one passion around environment is the fashion industry and how much textiles are done, and all her activist friends talk about other things while wearing Gucci and Prada, who are major contributors to issues. So we all know that we have to be careful of hypocrisy, because if you pick this and that, you also are always up to something that is potentially also an issue. This is a very tough challenge for all of us. To answer your question, A, I think you should get educated on the advancements from proof of work to proof of stake. B, if that then works for you, then you shouldn't worry about it. If you still think that that carbon output is too much of a problem for you, you should not support it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hello. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
He's here.
Hey, brother.
How are you?
Good.
Well, I'm going to be very short because I want to pass this mic to people who have actual question. What I want to say is that you've been a massive inspiration to me. I just think you're a legend. Do you guys agree? Well, I'm not going to ask for a hug, but if I can take a quick selfie with you, I would really appreciate it.
Let's do it. Let's go in the middle. My man.
Check one, two. just making sure it works. Yeah, I'd like a selfie too, by the way. No, I'm joking. Gary V, I mean, first and foremost, my name's Shim. Shimron Equiano, but all my friends call me Shim. It's a hell of a lot easier. And I've been consuming your content for a while, and you just seem like the kind of guy that was born in the 1900s, lived, died, born in the 1950s, lived, died, gone to the future, lived, died, and then come back to the present time to kind of educate us. And I think that your story, your message, the information that you're bestowing upon us is so valuable. And I think everyone in the room should be really grateful that you're born in this time with us.
It's very nice.
I also understand that there's a lot of people on planet Earth that talk a lot of shit. And it's not deliberate, right? People hear what you say, they then try and regurgitate that in their marketplaces and across their networks.
Yes.
And there's going to be a lot of people that don't actually achieve their dreams, no matter how hard they work. And I'm on a mission because I'm on a pursuit of excellence. Now, I'm going to live and I'm going to die trying to achieve those goals.
Let's stay there for a second because I'm excited about your flow. It's really interesting. What excites me for you, Shim, is that the process of living and going to die trying, if you have a healthy relationship with that, that is the dream.
100.
You know, to your point, so many people are not going to achieve their dreams because they arbitrarily decided that they want to own a private jet.
Right.
The problem isn't that people aren't capable of achieving their dreams. The problem is the dreams that are being created aren't thoughtful. We have a culture of not putting people in a position to have thoughtful dreams. That is my greatest passion. If you dream to be a nice person to your friends and family and loved ones and try to find something that you enjoy doing in your professional career, and regardless of how much money you make, live comfortably and not anxious within the means of what that does, that is a dream that I believe almost anyone on earth can achieve. The problem is that is not the narrative that we're putting into the world.
Fantastic, thank you so much.
I really believe that.
Oh, by the way, do you mind if I get a selfie too? I don't want to jump on the bandwagon, but if...
Let's go with the bandwagon.
Yeah, let's go, let's do this, let's go. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hi.
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you, how are you?
So well, what's
your
name?
Are you nervous?
What's that?
You asked me how I'm doing, I said, are you nervous?
I'm not nervous. Are you?
Yes.
Oh, you're nervous, get in here, Shim. Go ahead.
What I love about you so much is that you openly promote calling yourself on your shit. Okay, excuse my language. I don't like swearing, but...
You're great at it.
Oh, no. I just said the S word.
I think it really matters.
Yeah, and I feel like I need to call myself on my shit because when you do it and you're vulnerable, you accept help.
100%.
And
by the way, that's hard for me.
Yes.
I grew up in a family that complaining was demonized. I was the oldest. They didn't have time for that shit. We were living immigrant life. You know, the book that I have that's coming out was no question the most vulnerable I've been about my great safety place is the business world. I'm good at it. It's my safe place. It took a lot of effort and work for me to talk about my inner. Gary Vee is unbelievable at candor. I can answer everybody straight here. I can talk very straight. Gary Vaynerchuk with D-Rock, not great with candor. And I talk a lot about it in this book, and I appreciate you saying that, and I'm on my own journey to getting even more aggressive with me putting it out there. You know, I feel like I'm in such a place where I don't feel like I wanna put the burden of my shortcomings on people's heads, but the relatability and vulnerability really does matter and it helps. So thank you for saying that, and I'm on my own journey, but keep going.
And I can imagine how much harder it gets because the more successful that you get, the more you feel like I don't have shit to call
myself
what's
funny?
On.
You know what's funny to jump in on that? Not per se. Really? The reason things are working for me is, And back to Shim saying people say talk shit, I don't struggle with people misunderstanding me because first, I don't have the audacity to think that people should do the 5 hours worth of homework to really understand what I'm fully saying. So if they see one clip and it's off context, I understand. But more importantly, the reason I don't struggle with people talking shit is because I don't take in the accolades. All these very wonderful things that are being said right now, I'm incredibly flattered. But let there be no confusion, it doesn't make me feel special. I don't think I'm special. I really don't. I think I'm blessed. I think I'm a solid communicator that talks in a way that helps people see a different way. But I don't think, I'm fucking remarkably human. And I think that that's an important framework because when you don't hear the accolades, you don't struggle with the boos.
Yeah. Thank you. So, can I just ask?
Of
so
course,
my question is, sorry, I won't take
no,
too
okay.
long.
You
I
haven't
know
asked
that
it
all
yet.
Of you are so keen, and I feel so honored that
we
I get
time.
To ask you this question.
We have time. Everyone?
Thank you so much. So, leading on from that, you said something very profound that now, like as I'm thinking about it, I didn't realize how powerful it is. But you said that you are lucky to have the disadvantages that you had. That was something like that you find. This is you put that into perspective.
Yes,
like you've framed that. But on the contrary, the way that I was raised, I was quite privileged. And not just financially, in terms of the way that I was loved.
I
was always acknowledged and, you know, I was always that young girl who was, you know, so good and kind and lovely. And my parents always, like, picked me up for that until now. And that, I feel, was a big disadvantage because now I'm 24 and I find it, now that I'm trying to work my way up to success, I feel that sense of entitlement.
Yes.
And still I struggle with my relationship with money because the way that I spend, like even though I have multiple jobs and I've kind of built myself up, but still my spending, like I will happily spend on my mom's credit cards. And she, like we have constant arguments about how she's like, you need to stop living this kind of life that is not gonna serve you. It's not about whose money you spend. It's about you don't need this. And I speak to my cousin Moti about it. He tells me, you don't need to be driving your dad's 35 grand car. Be happy with what you have. And that's...
So a couple things. Let me jump in.
Yeah.
First of all, you are fucking remarkable for being this authentic around this issue. Thank you. Yeah. First of all. And even just looking at faces, like, it takes real self-awareness and courage to say you're spoiled.
Yeah.
It does, and I love you for it for a couple reasons. One, I think it's incredibly powerful because there's other people in that same situation right now, and you just did something for them. Two, more exciting for me because I care about it for you, most people don't see it. Those DMs that I get into, the reason I talk about so many things about, like, it is remarkably real to me that people over the age of 22 that still spend their parents' money are the most unhappy deep down. I really believe that.
I agree.
And so when I say it, I'm not trying to razz you if your mom's paying for your Uber. I'm not trying to razz you. I'm just trying to tell you I read hundreds of thousands of comments a year, and this is my clear observation. You just need, you know, do you know how to swim?
I'm from the fitness industry, so I'm a personal trainer and a fitness instructor, but my swimming is like terrible.
But
and
can
my
you
stamina,
swim?
Yeah, I can swim, but my stamina is horrible. I feel so like bad
okay,
at
no
swimming.
Worries. She's incredibly good at shitting on herself.
Yeah.
She's remarkable. Where I'm, let's stick with where I was going. Swimming for me was super scary. My mom was very scared of water, so she demonized it for me as a kid. I started swimming at 10 years old for only one reason, because I was playing knock hockey and I overheard at the swim club that my sister, who's 3.5 years younger than me, just started learning how to swim and my mom was cheering for her and I literally dropped the game, ran and jumped in the fucking pool and learned how to swim because I couldn't live knowing that my sister could swim and I couldn't. My relationship with swimming at 7, 8, 9, 6, 5, when everyone else was, is your relationship with this situation. You just need to jump. You need to do you have the credit card right now that your mom?
My mom actually recently told me that she changed her credit card detail. I think she's sly. She told me it stopped working.
But you tried it and it worked.
Yeah, and it worked.
Fucking mom. Right, your mom is your accomplice in this situation.
Yeah.
Do you have the credit card on you that it is?
No, do you know what? I don't know, like there's no way that she's let... It's even worse because it's on Apple Pay, so I don't even have to have her card.
Listen, I want to move on because I want to get to more. Listen to me. You're very close. Listen to me. You're very close. You're so far in accountability and vulnerability, and those are the first two things you got to get to before you jump.
Yeah.
You're this close. Listen to me. Just do it. He's right. You will be so much happier. You can't imagine. And I promise you, your cousin's right. None of that shit matters. It doesn't.
I care. That's the issue.
I know why you're doing it. You have to stop this chain, and it only can be you. Not your mommy, not somebody else. You, and you can do it. You care, but that's the surface level. It's eating you inside, underneath, and over time it's gonna get substantially worse. You're just a kid. You're so young right now. You still can pull out of this, but you have to. You have to. And good news, we recorded this, so I will run this over and over and over around the whole world to the point where you won't be able to walk around without people suffocating you. So you can either do it for yourself or D-Rock and I are gonna do it for you.
Thank you, Mom!
You're welcome, brother.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
What's your name? I'm Joanna.
Joanna.
And thank you so much. You've absolutely changed my life in so many ways.
Thank you.
But yesterday when I dropped my 8-year-old son off at school, he started crying because I was traveling to London and I missed an event today.
Mm.
And I said to him, you know, I'm going to see Gary V, and if it wasn't for Gary V, I wouldn't let you swear. he's allowed to say fuckface.
So aggressive.
He wouldn't be allowed to watch Minecraft or any of the other computer games because I was completely against anything like that until I started watching your content. I was a technophobe as well. But I said to you, when you're doing the protest, just remember why mummy has gone to see Gary Vee. And I've also set up a dropshipping business, and I obviously didn't know what that was until I obviously listened to your content. So my question to you is this. Any chance that your mum would write a parenting book?
First of all, thank you for the question, and thank you for that story. I am saving it. Some of you who follow me for long enough know it's the one that I've never talked about any book I was gonna write until I wrote it, and I've been talking for a decade about Perfectly Parented. I have more learnings to do before I write it, because I do think in a lot of ways it could be the most important book I ever write. My mom, as you can tell by my content, my dad likes to be at the forefront, which is why he begs for you to leave comments on his posts. But my mom is so behind the scenes. I always try to push her out. I know she could do so much for so many people. She is what I am. She's the OG of it. So I don't know if I can get her there, but I definitely feel like I can get her to be my partner in crime on the book. The big issue there is my dad is a very old school guy, and he's petrified that I make my mom the partner in my book with her, because if she makes more money than him, he'll die. And so it's a very big challenge in my own brain on that issue, but other than that, I think we're on our way.
Thank you very much for everything you do for everyone. And also thank you because you gifted me a V friend in your giveaway back in May.
Wow.
So thank you for that as well.
Congrats. Jesus. Which one do you have?
The Loyal Lobster. So, my question is, how do you not judge yourself but still hold yourself accountable?
By not judging myself and holding myself accountable. I'm gonna tell you why I answered that. I've been saying a lot of my content in my office, I'm like, there's a reason why there are different words. If judging yourself and accountability were the same thing, they'd be the same word. there's a very big difference between talking to yourself and talking down to yourself because you are parroting the voice of somebody who put that in you versus you wanting to be a stand-up person. What most people don't realize is the reason you shit on yourself is because one of your parents or somebody else shit on you first and you've taken on that voice. Judging yourself and beating yourself up and, you know, is the most important conversation a human can have. Because if you're not able to feel good about yourself and love yourself first, you can't love or do anything else productive. So I do it very simply. I hold myself to a standard that is very real professionally and personally to the best of my ability while having incredible amounts of flaws because I'm a human being. And I live with that because I know everybody else here struggles with something. We all struggle with something. We're all good at something. I just don't dwell on what I struggle on. I just try to make it slowly but surely better. And I put all my focus on what I'm great at. The end.
And can I have a photo as well?
And for the runners, while we've got this time, let's do like one shoot to the back and then some to the front as I'm looking around. My man, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
What's up, my friend? Let's go.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for taking my question.
Cheers.
All right, so I'm a pretty simple guy.
What's your name?
My name is Flavio. People call me Flavor, though.
Hold on. So you're a simple guy named Flavor with an epic suit on? Keep going.
All right, so I live, breathe, taking your content like... The first thing I do in the morning when I wake up, I'm all the way Gary V. I've told all my friends about you. All of them are consuming Gary V. So the question I have is something I've been wanting to ask for such a long time. It's just been like really difficult to get through to you. So the thing is that on my way to work, I'm consuming your content. And on my lunch break, I'm consuming your content. And after work, I'm consuming your content. And all of it is saying, you know, you need to be doing your research. Just like you said today, you're doing your research and taking your ideas to the next level. So how do I overcome my fear? At what point do I say I need to stop working for someone else to work on myself and to be working on doing the research for NFTs and all these new and upcoming things?
I think the first step based there is talk to me about your evening. Let's start there. When are you done at work?
Around 6:30, but with traffic and everything getting home, get home around 7:30. But then the next day I'm back at 4.
That's fine. So at 7:30, what's happening between 6:30 and 7:30? You're listening to my content?
100%.
So I think you need to cut out some of my content. No, really. Like, I'm incredibly flattered, and honestly, whether it's me or the millions of other people who have genuinely good intent to put positivity and practicality into your ears, I think people should listen to that shit the same way that they should go to therapy, eat well, take care of the environment. Feeding your soul and your mindset and your perspective is the engine of your life, so I'm glad. But like that hour from 6:30 to 7:30 on commute, maybe you take that out of Gary V land and maybe you instill learning about things that might become the passion of what you then decide to jump into. Because when you jump, you have to jump at this young of an age with this strategy in mind. Oh my God, I love esports more than life. Oh my God, I love medicinal medicine more. Oh my God, I love sneakers or video equipment or food or whatever it is. I love it so much that I'm prepared to take a step back in my living condition and what I spend money on to give me as much time to make this thing successful.
But with that, like, how do you know when you're ready to kind of take that jump? And
you don't know.
Because it's like, every now and again, I feel like I'm ready to take it. And then it's just like, I have that fear of, okay, what about like bills and financial stability and just like going
through. What are goals? What goal?
The goal is financial freedom and just being able to live on your own terms. You know?
But you could do that with $9 an hour.
Yeah, that's true.
Simple man.
Yeah, the thing is that like...
Hey, simple man.
No, true.
Hey, simple man.
Yeah. The thing is that like...
Hey, simple man.
The thing is that with that is like, you know, I'm so dedicated in what I do that I take pride in everything
beautiful.
That I do. But the thing is that I want to get to a point where I can do my own thing as well.
Brother.
But it's just that fear of being able to let go of what I'm currently doing now.
You spend money and allocated time to come here to ask this singular question. You're ready to move. Brother, you have to answer this for me before we move on. Who, honestly, who are you scared to fail in front of?
It's a bit of a difficult question, but
I'll
give you an honest answer.
Yeah, please.
So, at the age of 7, my father passed away. He was murdered in front of me.
Jesus.
But my father, he built his company on his own, and he kind of started more or less my age. And for me, obviously, I have quite big shoes to fill, and I wanted to do something on my own to kind of be the man that he once was.
Listen,
by doing it on my own as well.
Listen, that's some intense shit, right? That's not as simple as like a lot of what many of us deal with. But even in the intensity of a catastrophic life event that you just described, it is, if you can just do me this favor and realize this is a story that you sold to yourself, and in that story is your anxiety. It's a beautiful story. I admire you for what you just said. It still is a framework that is causing you more anxiety than you need to put on yourself.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Gary. Yes, I'm Scott, by the way. What advice would you give
closer to your mouth.
Oh, sorry.
No worries.
What advice would you give to two ex-construction workers about to launch an NFT project?
To pray. No, just kidding.
This is my business partner.
I know. I got to talk to you guys earlier.
Briefly, yeah.
So, remind me, that was the watch one,
yeah,
right?
The idea we've got is it's a watch. Lee, do you want to join in? He's the brain.
I see Lee.
I got Lee into crypto.
You're the looks, he's the brain?
Yeah. A little bit like that, little and large.
Scott,
Lee, the
biggest, I'll give you the answer. The biggest thing in NFT land right now is it's the worst extreme version of everything that I just talked about. Almost every NFT project being launched right now is the most selfish machine I've ever seen in my life. How do I sell these digital tokens as quickly as possible and get as much Ethereum as possible? So the answer to your question, I love that you guys said, you know, I didn't catch the construction part. The fact that you said construction guys, and then I recalled when we were upstairs that you have the watch thing.
Yes.
I'm making the assumption that you guys have some passion or think watches are cool. So we're right off the chart in a good place. The first thing you need to do immediately is start a Discord for your NFT project, live on Twitter, talk about watches and NFTs, and build your first 40 to 60 people in your community, and then be petrified. When I launched VFriends, here is the feelings I had. I, Gary Vaynerchuk, am petrified that people are about to spend money on this, and if this is not ROI positive for them, this will be the thing that kills me inside. I am mentally prepared to give up Gary V the brand, speaking, my books, and VaynerMedia itself to make sure for the next 45 years that I create an economy that provides value for the people that bet on me on May 12th. That's why it's gonna work. 99% of the other people that I'm watching very carefully are like, oh, this is a gold rush moment. I'm gonna launch this and I'm gonna make a lot of money and have no thoughts on how they're gonna make those NFTs valuable.
Exactly. No, we have got a great idea. Eventually, we wanna end it in the metaverse. We want a watch shop in the metaverse. So you can,
you know how many fucking watch shops are gonna be in the metaverse? That's fine, by the way. I'm pumped about that.
Yeah,
and just, in 7 years, when 8% of people are living in the metaverse, that will be an interesting concept.
Yeah.
That's all fine and dandy. You two will have a lot of good ideas, and you have people around you, he's filming, like, I love it. Just do this one thing for me. Be petrified that it's not valuable. That will really help you. Cheers.
Cheers, thank you.
Hi, Gary V.
How are you?
Very good, yourself?
I'm well.
Amazing.
What's your name?
My name is Kareem Wilson.
Kareem.
I recently started my own company.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Firstly, I want to thank you for coming here to London to speak to all of us.
I love London.
And
just rains a lot when I'm here, but I fuck with London.
And it's great to obviously see you speaking live for the first time. The question, obviously you spoke about kindness being one of your core values.
Yes.
The question I had for you and other new business owners is, as a new business owner, what should we focus on to help us as individuals and the people within our companies grow to the highest possible standard personally, professionally, and evolve that over time as required?
By having real communication with the people around you and by not ever wavering from your values. What D-Rock and Sarah and Ben know is way more truth than you know about how I run Vayner. All three of them here 100% know that you can be very below average and be safe, but if you're not nice, you're in danger. Now that pisses Ben off because he's an assassin and he would like a higher standard of assassination capabilities, but he knows it's true. And so does Sarah, and so does D-Rock. What you need to do is not say it, you need to live it. The way you know how to make it good for them is by actually talking to them. Cheers. Go ahead, my friend.
You've kind of answered some of my question already in the last two questions, specifically about the NFTs. I've got an existing company. We have an existing set of products. It's not really a set of products, it's a collection. And we do think about the ecology, or the, is that the right word? Eco? We do think about the environment and things.
It's great.
Where we want to go is we are petrified, hence why we've not run forward with it yet, and we have got a lot of other things going on in the real world with real products.
Yes.
What I'm looking at is how I pair real products with NFTs and then actually take some of those products and create NFTs that represent the real product, but I can't actually make it in the real world.
I understand.
I don't know if that makes sense, but we make glass products.
But certain things, glass doesn't allow you to do that, and
correct.
You'd like to make the NFT.
Yeah. So we have like a specific set of artists that we work with. We actually manufacture the products for them under white
label
and things.
Let me ask you a great question that may help you. It'll help them and everybody else who's debating. Why would it be good for D-Rock to buy one of these NFTs that's about glass that couldn't be done in the real world? Why would that be good for him?
I've been doing what I've been doing for over 20 odd years. I get the cash out thing, I get great. My son's just bought an NFT yesterday and they're spiking and everything's running forward and great in value. I'm looking at this long term.
I believe
I'm
that.
I'm not.
That, I'll be honest with you, even the way you're talking, I'm already confident on the intent.
Yep.
Let me give a big fat comma. Why would it be good for D-Rock to buy it?
It would be artistic intent, so it would be a very niche area, and I would imagine that someone buying it would have an affinity or an appreciation.
From a collecting
either
standard.
From a collection or an appreciation for the art, design,
so the,
or whatever
it is. If you go down that route,
yep.
You're in the business of creating demand for it.
Yes.
So the reason I keep telling everybody this is going to be dangerous is I know that most people don't have the talent to make something such a big story that people want collectability. You have to be an incredible sportsman or woman for your rookie card to be worth money. It's very hard to create Disney or Transformers or He-Man or Hello Kitty or Charlie Brown, but it gets done. It's hard to be Andy Warhol or Jackson Pollock.
It
and
is.
More importantly, with NFTs, everybody's gonna make them. So just like the algorithm, the supply will be so extraordinary that the demand can only fill up so many things. So what you need to do is make sure that people give a shit about you.
Yep.
And it, otherwise it won't work.
We have carved a niche in it. So a couple of months ago, I was talking to a guy who's involved in the art world and he only sells Caravaggios. He only sells extreme pieces at 50
yep.
million plus.
Yes.
I didn't realize that at the time of talking to him. And he said, you're in a really super niche where it's classed as contemporary, but you're also focused in glass. And I'm thinking, yeah, but I've got these artists that are creating amazing designs. If I could take their designs and turn it into rainbow colors.
I think it's beautiful. I'm following, by the way, because I'm very into collectible. You know, I
yep.
know that world. You need to create demand around the brand.
Yep.
So similar to them and everybody else, yesterday, you should start a Discord. I'm sure he knows what that is. You may know what that is. Start a Discord and start building a glass infinity group with the alluding to NFTs around this niche.
Right.
Start building the community before the launch.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Gary.
My man.
Over here. Thank you for coming to London, but we want you up in Scotland as well.
Respect.
Yeah. We're having to travel to see you, so you can come and visit us too.
I'm up for that.
Gary, my name's Lake, and I've been involved in one industry now for 40 years, which is the ledger industry, snooker clubs, pool bars and things. And we really suffered through the lockdown. And because I've been watching your videos, and I was really scared to go on Facebook and talk and do stuff, and I created this thing called Lake's Look at Life. And I do go on, I do swear, and I get into trouble from my wife for doing it. And that's your fault. Because of that, I got the confidence. And because our industry had been shut down by the Scottish government, I started fighting on the behalf of our industry because I got that confidence from watching you. That then got our industry open. But through that time, I was in a dark place. I'd lost a lot of money and, you know, trying to keep our business afloat. But because I was in a dark place, so were all the other people that were in our industry. So I thought, I'll fight for them. We got it overturned and we won. I went from having only £20 in my pocket some days to now I've taken over another business and putting down a £20,000 deposit. Only because having the attitude of listening to you about the worth ethic and working 18 hours a day and not stopping. So there's always got to be a tipping point. What I really want to know, you must have went through some dark times in your life. What was the tipping point and when did it happen? And when did it change all for you?
My dark points was, believe it or not, the entire world outside my house in my entire childhood. Back to what my new friend over there who's gonna stop taking her mom's money said. I was told that I was a loser by everybody but my mom and by business, right? I was an atrocious student, so every grown-up that I knew besides my mom, teachers, and my friends' parents looked down at me, right? Sports, I was remarkably good at until about 11 because I have extremely good hand-eye coordination, but after 11, speed, strength, and physical matter took over, and I wasn't as gifted in those arenas. So that world told me I wasn't good. So my dark times were the way most of us grow up. Most of the world for children is around school, sports, music, not much else. Now we're starting to see entrepreneurship, we're starting to see it. For me, it was entrepreneurship and my mom, but I never had a dark moment. You know, my only dark moments, my dark moments can never be about money, my friend. They can't. I don't value it enough. I really mean what I said to my very simple friend over there. People don't hear my story. I spent 22 to 34 years old working 6 to 7 days a week for 15 hours a day to build my dad's business for him and left with little. I didn't inherit shit. I wasn't put on. I put my parents on. Let there be no fucking confusion. I built a business from $3 to $65 million a year and was getting paid $48, $52, $72,000 a year. I was living in a shitty, basic apartment, didn't have a fancy car, wore the clothes I wore to work. I didn't need it. I had already gone through the tough part. The world already told me I was a loser. Of course I don't value their opinions. They were wrong.
So where was the tipping point? When was the day that you woke up and you just went, that's it, it's happening for me?
Never.
So it's still ongoing?
It just isn't about that. You understand, this is a perfect way to wrap up how we started. I am going to be one of the most known people on earth before I die. You know that, right?
Yep.
That will happen. But I don't care. I don't have a tipping point. It's not when my art sold at Christie's. It's not in a week when I'm on the cover of this magazine. It's not when I buy the New York Jets. It's all happening this whole time. There is no it. There is no I made it.
So basically, just for everyone who's maybe struggling just now, it's just keep on going on the journey. Just keep going, keep going.
It's, you know, it's funny. On the flight here, we took a weird flight. We took the 8 p.m. flight, which I don't normally do, because you land here, it's 8 a.m., but I'm all fucked up, you know. And so I was looking at the movies, and I like documentaries. I tend to watch that. That's how I learn certain things. And one of them is the Bruce Lee documentary, and it's Be the Water, right? And I've heard that of him. I'm not even sure I'm saying it exactly right, but I'm aware of that thing from him and that saying. And it was really funny. Like, I was just sitting there, and I had my phone on with the Wi-Fi, and I was mainly refreshing the Knicks-Bulls game because the Knicks are finally back, and I'm really fucking happy about it. And so I'm refreshing, but I'm thinking the whole time I'm kind of paying attention to the basketball game of that water thing, because that's how I live my life. Like, there is nothing. There is no, I made it, I didn't make it. It's all just very quiet. When you live in the framework that I'm talking about, when you're actually kind, which means you give without expectation, which means nobody ever disappoints you because you didn't expect them to do anything. Expectations is an insight to your insecurity, right? When you do that, when you're grateful, when you're fucking genuinely fucking grateful, like genuinely fucking grateful that today is another day I lived on Earth where I didn't have a catastrophic event like my dear friend there had. When people complain about stuff, and I have this friend whose father was murdered in front of him at 7, the fuck are you complaining about again? Remind me? Remind me? Your Instagram's not working so well? You didn't make $1 million yet? There are 845 million people who don't have access to fresh water in the world right now. There is 845 million people that don't have the fucking water that's sitting in front of you or access to it easily. What the fuck are we complaining about? Adversity is the foundation to success. Prosperity is the foundation to anxiety. I promise you, simplify your shit. Simplify your shit and you can make things happen. There was no day. Every day, I think I'm the fucking best. And every day, I have the humility when I am not the best to say I'm not the best. But it doesn't change the way I feel about myself ever, forever, to the fucking end. The end.
Fantastic.